V'atah titzaveh eles b'nei Yisrael v'yikhu eilecha shemen zayis zoh kosis lamor l'ha'alos ner tamid. And you shall command the people of Israel to take to you pure olive oil for lighting, in order to light the Ner Tamid. Dot, dot, dot. Zachor eis asher asolecha Amalek baderech b'tzeisachem mimitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on your way from Egypt when you were leaving. Dot, dot, dot. Vayehi bimei Achashverosh, hu Achashverosh, hamolech mehodu viad kush, sheva v'yasrimu mea medina. And it was in the time of Achashverosh, the Achashverosh who ruled from Hodu to Kush, 127 provinces. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Tetzaveh, Parshat Zohar, and Purim. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the ninth day of Adar, 5780, and happy birthday, Ora. My youngest daughter was born shortly before Purim. And a belated happy birthday to my brother, whose secular birthday was this past Monday. Yom Chamishi, as I said, the 9th of Adar, corresponding this year to March 5th. Okay, we have a lot on our plate. Let's see what we could get to. Before, let us say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. And a reminder, this is something that I've been doing in every show for the last 21 years plus. And I believe that it is an appropriate chapter of Tehillim and prayer that we should say all the time, because it asks for help from God as we are calling from any situations of despair. And now with the coronavirus business, very appropriate, and with many other things as well. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena aznecha kashivot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod. Ki imacha haslicha lema'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kivita nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara v'ashivya ha-omedim mebein bayam Uvein vayabasha, hamakom yirachem aleihem, v'yotziyem mitzara l'yirvacha, u'miafela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv, v'nomar amen. This Shabbat is another two Torah Shabbos, the second of the special Arba Parshiot, the four portions which are read before Purim and Pesach, And this one is a, I don't know, higher level than previous one and the coming ones, because the reading of Parshat Zachor is the only portion in the Torah which we have a Torah obligation to read. All other Torah reading is considered by rabbinic decree. That means the Parshat HaShavua on Shabbat and the reading on Monday and Thursday, and the reading at Shabbat Mincha and on fast days and on Chanukah and on Purim and a whole bunch of other readings, Rosh Chodesh, etc. The only one that is considered Torah level obligation are the three verses which we will read from a second Torah this Shabbat, Parshat Zachor. I should also say that there are opinions that Parshat Parah, which is next week, is also Do'oraita, but not seemingly on the level of Zachor. But we'll get there in a moment. First, the regular Parsha, and the reason we read the Seder of the week first and then the special Maftir is because Tadir, V'sheino Tadir, Tadir Kodem, we have a rule. It's not an ironclad rule, there are exceptions, but a general rule that when you have two mitzvot to perform, and one is frequently done, like the weekly Sedra reading, and one is less frequent, like Parshat Zohar, then we read Parshat Tetzaveh first and then Zohar. Okay. Parshat Tetzaveh is famous also for being the only Sedra in Shemot, Vayikra, and Bamidbar where Moshe's name does not occur. In next week's Torah reading, God got upset, so to speak, and understandably, with the golden calf fiasco, and he wanted to destroy the Jewish people. Moshe, in a call it a frantic plea for them not to be harmed, said, "If you destroy them, then erase me from the book which you have written." That book meaning the Torah. Now, there is a concept that when a very righteous person says something, even if the conditions are not met for it to be so, there is still a culpability that needs to be addressed. So God did forgive the people, and Moshe's name was not erased from the Torah. But in token fashion, it was erased from Parshat Tetzaveh, which we read this Shabbat. And there are three reasons that are given for Moshe's name specifically not being in this Sedra. Number one, God said in Parshat Ki Tisa, Ki'ilu, as if God said, when Moshe said, "Erase me from your book," he says, "I'm going to have to, but I don't want to do it right away." And if you go around the cycle of the year of the Torah reading, from Ki Tisa, the very last opportunity, so to speak, for God to remove Moshe's name would be in Parshat Tetzaveh. Another reason is that Parshat Tetzaveh most often falls around Moshe Rabbeinu's birth date and Yahrzeit, the 7th of Adar, which was 2 days ago, and that makes it extra poignant that his name is missing from the Torah reading of the week in which he was born and died. The third reason is a much more positive reason, and that is that the main theme of Tetzaveh is the glory of the Kohen Gadol and the Kohanim, the requirement to make special garments for them, and therefore the main focus of the Sedra is Aharon, Moshe's brother. And usually Moshe's presence eclipses that of Aharon. We have many references to Moshe v'Aharon, a few to Aaron and Moshe, and pretty much the focus of the whole Torah is Moshe Rabbeinu. And on this Sedra that features the glory of Aaron HaKohen HaGadol, Moshe's name is not mentioned. It's like a courtesy to Aaron. And we could even say it in a more personalized way, that Moshe Rabbeinu stepped out of the scene, out of the spotlight, in order for all of the focus to be on his brother. For whatever reason, the fact is that there is no reference, no mention of the name Moshe in Parsha Tazria, Parsha Tetzaveh. In last week's Seder of Parsha Truma, only in the very first verse, and God spoke to Moshe saying, that's the only occurrence of his name in Truma. So we have the full presentation of Mishkan, almost full, and the follow-through with the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol and Kohanim, and then the Mizbeach HaZahav in Parsha Tetzaveh. God commanded these things to Moshe, but Moshe's name is not mentioned at all. When we come to next week's Sedra, Moshe Rabbeinu's name is not only mentioned in the Sedra, which he said, wipe me out of your book if you're going to hurt them, if you're going to kill the people. It is mentioned the most times of any Sedra in the Torah. 49 times we find the name Moshe. So go figure. For those who like numbers and statistics, that's the story. And you shall command the people to tell them to take olive oil for the purpose of lighting the Ner Tamid. The Ner Tamid is a reference to the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash, specifically the branch, the lamp, according to many, closest to the Kodshei Kodashim, the Holy of Holies, that there was a miracle that was recorded that it continued burning, not just for the night as it was meant to, but throughout the 24-hour period of the day until it was refreshed and continued the next day. So it became a permanent light. The concept of, or the practice of, a shul having a Ner Tamid, and many shuls set up their electricity that when all the lights are turned off, only the Ner Tamid continues to flicker, is a reference to and a commemoration of the Ner Tamid of the Beit HaMikdash. Just to add that the constant fire on the altar is also part of that which contributed to the idea of a Ner Tamid for our shuls, our synagogues. So let's move on to Zachor, remember what Amalek did. The Torah at the end of Parshat Ki Teitze commands us to remember what Amalek did, describes briefly what they did do, and tells us to wipe out the remnant of Amalek and to never forget. There's a mitzvah taseh of Zachor, remember, and a prohibition of not forgetting. Our sages teach us that not forgetting is in your heart. In other words, you should always remember that there is evil anti-Semitism for no good reason in the world. This is the perpetuation of the Amalek type of behavior. And that would be sufficient to not have to verbalize anything, just know it in your brain and feel it in your heart. And when a person reads a book about the Holocaust, for example, I believe that he is fulfilling or avoiding the prohibition of lo tishkach, thou shalt not forget. And we take that very seriously. So the question then is, what does Zachor, remember, come to add to lo tishkach. If you remember, then you didn't forget. If you don't forget, then you remember. So we are taught that zachor comes to add that the remembering has to be verbalized. And since the period of time of forgetting things is about a year, we are commanded to read Parshat Zachor once a year. Technically, could have been done any time of the year. And if it were not for the extra factor involved, possibly it would be where it is in the Torah at the end of Ki Teitzeh, that the gabbai or the rabbi would make an announcement, have kavanah to fulfill the mitzvah of Zachor, and they would read. It gets read twice, once as the end of Shvi, and once as Maftir on Parshat Ki Teitzeh. However, Chazal came along, the sages came along and said the following. The descendant of Amalek, one of the descendants of Amalek, is Haman Harasha, wicked Haman. He is not just a biological, genealogical descendant of Amalek. He is the embodiment of the Amalek concept. When the Megillah tells us that Mordechai was the only one in the king's court who refused to bow before Haman, the way the text reads, you would think that Haman did not notice that Mordechai didn't bow. Yet the other people in the courtyard would daily ask Mordechai how come he's defying the king's orders. Because they were all bowing and none of them wanted to really, but they had no choice. How come Mordechai thinks he's better and doesn't bow? He explained to them his halachic obligation not to bow. This is explained as Haman deifying himself or wearing an idol on his being. Whatever the reason, it basically came out, I'm not bowing to him because I'm Jewish. The reaction of the people in the king's court was to go to Haman and tell him that Mordechai didn't bow to him in order to see what Mordechai would do. This infuriated Haman. We know this from the Purim story. And he decided to destroy every man, woman, and child of the nation of Mordechai because he was slighted by that one person more, because the other people in the king's court told him that it was done because he was Jewish. And because of that, he could not just say about Mordechai, off with his head. He had the power to put Mordechai to death for defying the king's orders of not bowing to him. And that would have been it. Except the Megillah tells us, ki higid lahem, higidu lahem, asher hu Yehudi, because they, the advisors and the members of the king's court, told him that that Mordechai was Jewish. And that's why he desired to destroy every man, woman, and child, the nation of Mordechai. That is Amalek. That is Hitler, Yimach Shemo, and unfortunately, many, many others throughout the generations. So, because of the Purim connection to Amalek, Chazal said, even though the Torah doesn't indicate when it should be said, we command that it be said on the Shabbat before Purim. And that Shabbat became known as Parshat Zachor. There's a very well-known issue about who is obligated on Zachor. Definitely men are, and the question is, are women? So I might think, we might think, one might think, that Parshat Zachor is a time-related positive mitzvah, and generally women are exempt from those kind of Torah commands. Come our sources to tell us that technically this is not a time-related mitzvah, because, as I said before, it could be done any time, except that our sages wanted us to connect it to Purim. So when do we have to do it? The Shabbat before Purim. But essentially, it is not a time-related mitzvah, and women thereby would not be exempt. Are they obligated? No, there's more. According to one major school of thought, there is a package deal in the mitzvah of Zachor. Remember what Amalek did? Wipe them out, and don't forget. That package deal means that only those who are commanded in a military sense to destroy Amalek, namely men, are obligated on the other two mitzvot that are part of this package, and women would be exempt. In fact, even though that's only one school of thought, it's the reason that men have to hear specifically Parshat Zachor, which contains the command of Timche, and not just the other Amalek portion, which we read Purim morning, by the way, and that is Vayavo Amalek Vayilachem im Yisrael Berefidim, the battle of Amalek and the nation when we came out of Egypt. And there, God says, Emche et Zecher Amalek, I will wipe out their remembrance. But it became a joint venture, and the command of Timche is only in those psukim at the end of Ki Teitzei. What comes from this, well, I also have to tell you about the second school of thought. Second school of thought is that the mitzvah of Zachor is independent of the command to destroy Amalek, and therefore women would be included in that. And Ashkenazim generally follow that. They require / highly recommend that their women hear Parshat Zachor, and they will go out of their way, we will go out of our ways to allow women to hear that, especially women who might have babies or young children and they can't make it to shul on time. So many, many shuls have an extra reading of Zachor after the davening, and that's mostly for women or men who weren't there for the first reading of Zachor. Many shuls will also read Zachor at Mincha in the afternoon, just to increase the options for women and men to hear Parshat Zachor. Comes Purim, and the Torah reading, as I mentioned, is the other Amalek portion. The other Amalek portion does not mention our command to destroy Amalek. So if there is a linkage there, men have to hear regular Parshat Zachor, and women are exempt. But if women are commanded because Zachor is an independent mitzvah, then the reading of Purim morning is just as satisfactory for them as is the reading of Parshat Zachor. Bottom line, any woman who, for whatever reason, is not able to hear Parshat Zachor this Shabbat should make sure she goes on Purim morning earlier than Megillah reading, because right before Megillah reading, we have Torah reading of Vayavo Amalek, and she should have in mind that that is the fulfillment of the mitzvah from the Torah of Zachor. There's a lot more about that, but let me leave it with the emphasis on the fact that Amalek was a a nation, and there are genealogical considerations as to who is an original Amaleki, and yet what has gone far beyond that is the Amalek types in the world. Any person in the world who desires to destroy the Jewish people is an heir, a spiritual heir, to Amalek. And I would go as far as including some of the anti-Semitic perpetrators that we've had in our own time, of people whose hatred for Jews is irrational, and they strike out by a shooting spree in a Jewish restaurant or a shooting spree in a Jewish synagogue, and many are not remorseful at all for have taken lives because they were continuing their spiritual parents' tasks. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but Amalek as a nation is not recognizable today. Unfortunately, it is alive and well in all generations, including our own. And the mitzvah of Zachor and Lo Tishkach are still there. And the mitzvah of Timche is technically only when there is a Jewish army. I don't mean the IDF, but that's close, but a Jewish army under the instruction of a king and a Sanhedrin. And we don't actually have the permission to go out and kill, but we certainly have an obligation to defend ourselves and to fight anti-Semitism and anti-Israel behavior and rhetoric around the world. That is part of it. One last point. I don't remember the commentary who said this, but I found it very poignant. Remember what Amalek did when we came out of Egypt? Has another side to it. Remember what we did or didn't do in order to fall victims of an Amalek attack. In other words, even though we survived, and were victorious against Haman, let's say, on Purim story, that's another thing which maybe we'll get to, and we survived the attack against Amalek. Unfortunately, throughout history, there have been very, very significant body counts, even though we have survived and have not been eradicated, Baruch Hashem, the toll has been high sometimes. And sometimes, miraculously, not a person was lost. But the fact that we are subject to attack is something we not only have to remember, but we have to do some introspection as individuals and as a community to see what we are not doing enough of and what we are doing wrong and what we should be doing in order to have the protection from God that we won't even be subjected to the threat, let alone the success of the threat. I don't have answers, but I have feeling. Every single rocket that has been fired from Gaza, into Israeli territory, whether it caused damage or not, whether it caused injury or not, the fact that we are subjected to that bombardment and that people in the what's called the Gaza envelope are subjected and stressed out, adults as well as children, or I should say children as well as adults, by every attack, whether or not there was any damage, means that we need to do some introspection. I am not saying that a rocket is because X, Y, or Z. That would be very presumptuous. I believe only a Navi Emet can say that. And I cringe when I hear some of the leaders of the religious community who attribute these calamities and these attacks to the lack of Shmirat Shabbat or this project or that thing or whatever. I'm not going to say any of that. But whether or not there's a direct connection, we need to assume that there is and have some serious, deep introspection, hopefully carried out in a very positive way into action. So when you have a campaign to preserve the Shabbat, or a campaign to say brachot all the time, or a campaign to give more tzedakah, whatever the endeavor is in order to invoke God's further protection, it's good. There are people who are handling the military side of these things, and we pray for their success, and that's our job too. The instrumental intro to the show is from Lenny Solomon, and so is this next song. It has nothing to do with Purim, but is related to Shabbat and related to every single day.
Ana bekoa kilula temecha tati tzerura kaverinat rinat amecha zmeinu tareinu nora. Bekoach gedulat yimincha tatir tzirura tatir tzirura kabel rinat rinat amecha zechveinu tareinu nora. Ana bekoach gedulat yimincha tatir tzirura tatir tzirura kabel rinat rinat amecha zechveinu tareinu nora. Did it and did it and did it up, did it and did it and did it up, did it and nine 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 nine. Did it and did it and did it up, did it and did it and did it up, did it and nine 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 nine. Tatir tzirura, kaberinat, rinat amecha, zechveinu tareinu nora. Ana bekoach gedulat yimincha, tatir tzirura, tatir tzirura, kaberinat, rinat amecha, zechveinu tareinu nora. Did it nine, did it nine, nine, did it up, did it nine, did it nine, nine, did it up, did it nine, 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 nine. Did it nine, did it nine, nine, did it up, did it nine, did it nine, nine, did it up, did it nine, nine, nine. We'll be right back.
I mentioned before a commentary that said that not only do we have to remember what Amalek did, but we have to look into ourselves and see what we did or didn't do in order to be subject to the threat. This is a very important concept with Purim as well. Purim, on one way of looking at it, is a total success for us and a farcical failure on the part of our enemies. Haman was so arrogant that he revealed his plot almost a full year before it was to take place, which gave plenty of time for Mordechai and Esther to do what they did. And Haman was actually taken out of the action 11 months before his plot was supposed to be hatched. But because of Ahasuerus's crazy rules, that a decree of the king can't be rescinded, and this strikes us as very ironic, because the King of Kings, capital K, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, is known to have rescinded his orders when the situation called for it. So here we have a human king who actually was a usurper to the power, who is arrogant enough to say, whatever I say sticks and it can't be taken back. All you could do is make another decree on your own and I'll back that one also. And that was permission to defend yourselves when the day came. Which means that for almost a year, there was a sword hanging over the Jewish people of the Persian kingdom. And I imagine there was a lot of anxiety and distress and stress. And then a magnificent God helped behind the scene victory. So we now have a task of celebrating the victory, celebrating the miracles, celebrating God's protection, even though it was in a period of Hester Panim, where God hides his face, so to speak, from us. But we also need to reflect on what went wrong in order to create all of this. The general feeling is that the attendance by the Jews in the kingdom of the elaborate parties of Ahasuerus, where he flaunted the plunder of the Beit HaMikdash, which he had himself stolen from someone else, Jews should not have been there. In fact, this shows up in our command. Well, I'll tell you that in a moment, but let's go back to a step. We need to reflect. When? Excellent question. On Purim? No. No, on Purim we celebrate. We read the Megillah, and even the mournful parts of the Megillah, where the tune is switched from regular Megillah reading to the reading of Eicha, it's not done with a heavy heart or serious intent. We are supposed to thoroughly enjoy Purim, enjoy Megillah reading, enjoy the Seudah, enjoy Mishloach Manot and Matanot Levyonim, and thank God with Al Hanisim in every Amidah and every time we say Birkat HaMazon, and to, let's say, taint or spoil a little bit of the feeling of joy is not appropriate. You don't give a Dvar Torah at the Purim Seuda about the lack of proper behavior on the part of the Jews of the kingdom that allowed a Haman to rear his ugly head. Doesn't belong on Purim. Okay, when? I'll tell you when. Parshat Zohar. Tanit Esther. The day before Purim. That's your day for a certain amount of thinking and introspection that will allow and also enhance the celebration of Purim. I have a mashal, one of my favorite that I made up a long time ago. It's to a 9-year-old boy who just received a birthday present from his parents of something that he's wanted for a long time, and that was the super-duper box of Crayola crayons, 128 colors. I'm throwing back nostalgia now. I don't know if they have bigger boxes now or whatever. 128 colors with a built-in crayon sharpener, and he's ecstatic because he loves to draw and color with his crayons. In fact, when his parents were out one day shopping, they left him on his own, and he drew some beautiful pictures all over the kitchen wall. His parents come home, and they are not happy. They see the crayons all over the walls. They yell at him. They hand him a bucket with soap. A bucket of soap and water and sponges, and they have him clean everything off. And now they are contemplating punishment. So they come up with a punishment. They say to him, give us back the crayons. It will be 1 month that you will be out without your crayons until we will give them back to you if you've behaved during that month. Then they come to him the next day, and they have a batch of paper and his crayons. And they sit him down at the kitchen table, and they say, for the next hour, you will draw pictures as beautiful as you can, and we will then take those pictures to the children's hospital to brighten up their rooms. Okay, is this a conflict? No. A child has to understand, we have to understand, that punishment for misuse of crayons comes in two styles. Losing the crayons, abstaining from using them, and using them for a proper purpose. Tanit Esther is a day, there are other reasons too, but it's a day of fasting right before Purim. And in Yerushalayim, it's a day before the day before Purim. Tanit Esther is a day of abstaining from eating and drinking because the Jews in Shushan ate and drank at Ahasuerus' party when they shouldn't have, and the rest of the kingdom as well. So in punishment, so to speak, or to atone for not proper eating and drinking, we abstain from eating and drinking in the form of a fast. Comes the next day, and we celebrate Purim with eating and drinking and sending of gifts of food to others and elaborate meal, a mitzvah to have that meal, and a practice to drink more than usual. I will interject here, maybe not the best place, but in case I forget, there is no mitzvah to get drunk on Purim. The mitzvah is, Well, the custom is to drink more wine than you usually drink. Wine is the only beverage that belongs on Purim. Whiskey really has no place at all. I will add, but I'm totally joking about this, it's a famous joke, a groaner actually, that in addition to wine, which is mentioned 6 times in the Megillah, there is also beer that is mentioned 10 times in the Megillah, especially in the Hebrew name for beer, which is bira, as in Shushan HaBira. And therefore, beer is an acceptable drink on Purim as well. That was a joke. And it's my nature to throw those in, even though it broke up the statement. Wine, more than you usually have, a little bit more than you usually have, no mitzvah to get drunk. And I would say that those people, those great rabbonim, who get roaring drunk on Purim and are able to handle it, I will say they're doing the wrong thing because they teach by example to many, many, many other people who can't handle it. And there are stories that I've witnessed myself of excessive drinking on Purim that have been a total disgrace. And it's not meant to be a disgrace. It's meant to be a celebration and a proper use of food and drink. Excuse me. Now, getting back to the crayons, he had them both. He lost the crayons for a month, but he had to do with the crayons a better thing than he did the first time by drawing on the kitchen walls. Now he drew pictures for children in the hospital in order to cheer them up. That is the perspective that I wanted to share on Purim, on Tanit Esther before Purim, and on Purim itself. Lenny Solomon and Schlockrock have a very entertaining song for Purim, which I will play now afterwards, after which I will make a few parting points and wish everyone the appropriate wishes for this week.
Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Mishloach manad hu mitashin tu. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Achashverosh was the man. Queen Vashti didn't fit the plan. He threw her out. Esther was in. She saved the Jews and Haman didn't win. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Mishloach manad hu mitashin tu. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Mordechai was a righteous man, so Bigtan and Teresh's evil plan wouldn't bow down, made Haman mad, but in the end Mordechai was glad. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Shloach manad hu mitashin tu. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. In Adar on the 14th, we hear Megillah and make a scene. We have a seuda and give tzedakah and shake our groggers noisily. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish. Mishloach manad hu mitashin tu. Purim, man, it's great to be Jewish.
Before we call it a show, let me review the mitzvot and practices of Purim briefly. There's Al HaNisim in each Amidah, and I'm starting with that because we daven Ma'ariv before we read the Megillah. Al HaNisim is said in the Amidah and is said in Birkat HaMazon. There is no reference to Purim in the Al HaMichya, Bracha Achrona, but in Birkat HaMazon there is Al HaNisim. Al HaNisim in both the Amidah and the Birkat HaMazon are inserted into the same kind of bracha, modim, we thank and acknowledge God for whatever, and nodelecha, we acknowledge and thank God for things. So the appropriate place for mentioning, acknowledging, and thanking God for miracles is those are those brachot of modim and nodeh. If one forgets to say Al HaNisim and finishes the Amidah or the Birkat HaMazon, he does not repeat. Not only doesn't he repeat, he may not repeat. That's the rule for Al HaNisim. If he remembers in the middle, meaning you just pass the place of Al HaNisim, let's say in the Amidah you said Va'al Kulam, and V'chol HaChayim Yoducha Sela, and then you snap your finger and you remember you left out Al HaNisim, you go back and you say it and continue. In Birkat HaMazon, it's until the Baruch Atah of the ending of that bracha, which is Al HaOretz V'Al HaMazon. Same thing in the Amidah, until Baruch Atah, you go back. Once you say Hashem's name, then you continue without going back. In the case of Birkat HaMazon, when you get up to the Harachamons, there is a way to insert Al HaNisim there. You can find it in Torah Tidbits. And in the Amidah, similarly, right before you take your steps back, and you say Yihyul Ratzon Yimrei Fi, before that and the steps back, you have a place to insert the Al HaNisim that you forgot to say. But if you finish, you don't go back. Next comes Megillah reading twice. Megillah reading at night, Megillah reading in the daytime. It sounds strange based on the attendance statistics. With many, many, many shuls having a packed house for the night davening and Megillah reading, and not so much for the morning. Everybody should know, men, women, and children of the age of Chinuch, they have to hear Megillah twice, once at night and once in the day. There are many extra readings in the course of the day to accommodate those people that couldn't make it early enough to get to shul. And if you had to choose, which I don't recommend, between the two, the morning one is a little bit more important than the night one. But that's a technicality. And it's counterbalanced by the fact that you don't pass over a mitzvah. So we're not talking about, okay, I'm not that religious, I'll only hear it once. Every Jew, and when I see in writing, every observing Jew, no, every Jew is obligated to hear Megillah twice. And if they don't, they're not doing the right thing. And what are they guilty of? Don't want to discuss that now. In the morning, there are other mitzvot that kick in, specifically this Torah reading, which is right before Megillah. As I said before, those are the nine verses at the end of Bishalach in Vayavo Amalek, Vayilachem im Yisrael Birfidim. And then Matanot La'Evyonim, giving of gifts, usually of money, to poor people. Let me mention about that. That the best thing would be if you actually gave gifts of food and money to a poor person. A lot of people can't do that because they don't have access to a poor person when they want it, so to speak. And what they do is designate an amount of money and give it to someone collecting who commits himself to distributing it on Purim morning. And further details I'll have to leave out. I will say, though, that even though most Jews in many communities really have a field day when it comes to Mishloach Manot, the mitzvah of Matanot Levionim is a higher level. So one should pay attention to that and not spend elaborate sums on Mishloach Manot and a pittance on Matanot L'Evyonim. Then you have Mishloach Manot, which is the gift of at least two foods to at least one person. Matanot Lev Yonim has to be to two people. Mishloach Manot Ish L'Re'eh, who is to one person. Again, there are many details, but we can't go into them now. There is some more information in the hard copy of Torah Tidbits or on the website, www.ttidbits.com, where there's a link to this week's edition of Torah Tidbits. And Seudat Purim, a festive meal, which is a mitzvah. And again, appropriate behavior throughout the day is highly preferred to inappropriate behavior, which gets blamed on imbibing too much. One thing I didn't mention is the minhag of giving zecher lemachatzit hashekel. It's done on Tanit Esther or right before Megillah reading. And it is the custom to take the coin that you have in your country that is designated as a half. Here in Israel, we actually have what's called a half shekel. In the United States, a half dollar. In England, 50p. In Europe, whatever the currency there, the euro, so half of a euro. And to give three of those to charity. Most shuls have collection boxes specifically designated for machatzit hashekel, zecher lemachatzit hashekel. Notice that I caught myself twice saying machatzit hashekel and corrected it to zecher lemachatzit hashekel. Machatzit hashekel is a mitzvah to give a half silver shekel only during the time of the Beit HaMikdash. When we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, we have a remembrance of the machatzit hashekel, which is Parshat Shkalim, which was 2 weeks ago, and the giving of Zecher L'Machatzit HaShekel on right before Megillah or on Erev Purim, Tanit Esther. A further custom is to give not only three half shekels, but also the value or the total of the value of the original machatzit hashekel, which I calculated based on the price of silver and the conversion rate between dollar and shekel to be about 20 shekel. So even though you could suffice it with a shekel and a half, giving 20 shekel or its equivalent would be a higher level of doing that practice, that mitzvah, that minhag, because it is the value of the original silver half shekel. There's so much more, but that's it for now. So I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. I remind you to remember and not to forget. And if you don't know what you're supposed to remember and what you're not supposed to forget, then you haven't been listening to the whole show. And a very, very happy, meaningful, and proper Purim. And I could actually say an easy fast for Tanit Esther, whereas the other four rabbinic fasts, Tisha B'Av, Tzom Gedalia, Asar B'Tevet, and Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, are mournful. Tanit Esther is not mournful. It is serious. And there's your chance to reflect on the serious part of Purim, so that you will really have a Purim Sameach. Hishtameach.
Ay, 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 oy, rech, yum, min, 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 no. Oh, yeah, no. Mis, viel lech us neues chayim ay kibi ir bi ir bi u mechu vi si viel lech us neues chayim
vi ir bi ir bi u mechu ve ya si viel lech us neues chayim vi bi ir bi ir bi u mechu si viel lech us neues chayim
na
No.